Okay. Great. Well, it's great to see you all. Kim, thank you very much for your leadership and for your kind introduction to our president of the CWA, Larry Cohen. Of course, it's always great to be with you. And you know, I get inspired every time I hear him. Even when he's in my office pounding on my desk, I get inspired. Wade Henderson, of course, a great longtime friend and president of the Leadership Conference on Civil Rights. And I might just add parenthetically, this is the civil rights battle of our time. And that is to give workers more rights, to give them the right to organize as they see fit, not just as the employer sees fit. It is the civil rights issue of today. And I thank Dave Bonnier, my longtime friend and, of course, former colleague of mine when I was in the House, for the wonderful job that you've done in educating the American people about the Employee Free Choice Act and fighting back against the anti-EFCA lies and propaganda. Now, that's a full-time job in itself, fighting against those. I also want to thank Bob Borsage and Roger Hickey. I saw Roger when I came out. I missed Bob, but to thank them. To thank them for their amazing leadership of the Campaign for America's Future. I just want to say that in the darkest days of the Bush-Cheney era, Bob and Roger rallied the progressive forces across the country. They marshaled progressive ideas. They mobilized a lot of progressive voters. I guess that's why, for the first time, I just saw Roger. I said, I guess we can't call this Take Back America conference. We took it back last November. Make no mistake about it. For those of you who have been here before, this may look like the same Washington, D.C. I can tell you it's not. It has changed, and it's changed much for the better. Now it's time for one more big change, and that's to take back our right to organize unions and to bargain collectively. Now, of course, the biggest change we've had is that we have a smart, hard-charging, progressive president, a president who understands working people, believes in unions, and I might add he was on our labor committee when he was in the Senate, and he was a proud co-sponsor of the Employee Free Choice Act, and he stands four square behind it today. That is change you can believe in. And isn't it great to have a Department of Labor and Secretary Solis that's actually pro-labor, pro-organizing, and pro-workers' rights? Now, again, that's change you can believe in, folks. For 8 years, working people in this country were losing their jobs, losing income, losing health care, losing their pension. Well, I guess you can sum it up, they were losing the American dream. So it's time to rebuild the great middle class in this country. And make no mistake, the way to do that is by passing the Employee Free Choice Act. Now, I don't have to tell you how incredibly important this bill is. You know that. Now, I don't have to tell you that it's an uphill fight to get it passed. I don't have to tell you. Larry just told you. The National Chamber of Commerce, the millions they have spent to spread misinformation about the bill. But I do have to tell you that we can win this. Because the American people know that the economy is broken, and they know the best bet for fixing it, our best bet for strengthening the middle class, is to strengthen the rights of workers. And the best way to do this is to be organized. And the best way to do that is to have the Employee Free Choice Act. So it's very logical. People kind of get it. They understand it. They also know that when 60% of workers want to join a union, but only 7% are in one, something's broken. When the average CEO makes 400 times what the average worker does, something's broken. When ordinary workers have their retirement plans cut back, but executives get gold-plated pensions, and something's broken. Well, how do we get in this fix? Well, we got here because for too long, Larry said, for all these years, the right to form a union has been systematically undermined. Even though most brazen union-busting tactics are tolerated or punished with a mild slap on the wrist. And even when employees succeed in forming a union, nearly half the employers simply refuse to negotiate a first contract with their employees. I've always wondered this. Why should people have to walk across broken glass, or go through some kind of boot camp hell to join a perfectly legal organization under our Constitution. Now, unfortunately, that's what's happening to so many of our people. I mean, to get to join a union, what they have to go through, it's like it shouldn't be allowed in our country. And the problem is, it's nothing new. It's been going on for a long time. This is not something new. We've had union busting activities going on, I'd hate to say this, probably since Taft-Hartley was passed. But it's gotten worse. It got worse in the 60s, the 70s, 80s, progressively kept getting worse all the time. I tell the story many times about my own personal feelings about this, and you know, we're all affected personally one way or the other, I think. Something like this. I tell the story about my brother Frank. My brother Frank worked at a plant called Delavan's, small manufacturing plant in West Des Moines, Iowa. Worked there for 23 years. Proud member of the United Auto Workers. Organized that plant shortly after World War II. So my brother worked there for 23 years, from the 50s up until about 1975. And old man Delavan, I'm going to call him that, Mr. Delavan owned the plant. And they had about 300 workers. They had machine tools. They made really fine parts like nozzles for jet engines and things like that. So very highly skilled kind of workmanship. And so my brother worked there for 23 years. I remember coming home once when I was in the military, and I came home once on leave for Christmas, and he'd worked there 10 years. 10 years. And he'd never been late once nor missed work one day in 10 years. So at the Christmas dinner, they gave him a nice gold watch with his name on it. Kind of nice. 23 years. In 23 years, he only missed 5 days of work because of an Iowa blizzard one, a couple of times. Couldn't get to work. 5 days out of 23 years. And he had a good union. And in 23 years that he worked there, they never had one strike. They never had one stoppage. Whenever the contract would come up, Delavan and his managers would meet with them. They would hash things out. They'd sign the contract, and on they would go. And then about, as I said, around 1975, Mr. Delavan, sold the company. And he sold it to a group of young investors. One of these young investors openly bragged, printed in the Des Moines Register. He said, if you want to see how to get rid of a union, come to Delavan's. This was in the newspaper. So the next time the contract came up, they hemmed and they hawed and they haggled about and they wouldn't reach an agreement. And finally, without a contract, for the first time ever in that plant's history, the workers went out on strike. First time ever. Now, that's the first time I ever got to see what scabs really were, when they brought in what they called replacement workers. And I'd never known about this before. I'd never known about replacement workers. They brought in replacement workers. And it was tough. I mean, there were some gunshots. There were windows broken. I mean, there were people losing their livelihoods. They had kids in school, other people coming in and taking their jobs. It was not a very nice scene. And my brother dutifully walked the picket line with others. Well, after 1 year, of course, guess what happened? They decertified the union. All the people that came into work, they voted to decertify the union. They didn't want to give up their jobs either. They're sort of pitting people against one another. And so after 23 years, my brother is out of work. Now, the one thing I didn't tell you about my brother is he's disabled. He was deaf. Delavan went out and hired deaf people to work at his plant back in the 50s. It turned out to be some of the best workers, and it was a very noisy place. They didn't care about the noise. Didn't bother them any. They could focus on all that little intricate stuff they were doing. So here's my brother. He's now 53 years old. And you know where a 53-year-old deaf man finds a job? He got a job as a janitor at night in a shopping mall. So here he's gone from a job where he was actually making nozzles for jet engines that I flew in the military. He was proud of that. He had health benefits. He had retirement benefits. He had the union to back him up. Now here he is. I'm not demeaning a janitor, but at that time, they were not organized. He was paid the minimum wage, no health benefits, no retirement benefits, nothing. He never got over it. He always wondered, how could it be in America that they would allow something like this to happen? How would the laws protect the people that did that to him and so many of his co-workers, many of whom were disabled, who are now out on the streets trying to find work someplace? Well, I said at that time, after that, that's about the time I came to the house, and that's about the time you came to the house too, Dave. I said at the time, I said, you know, if I ever get in a position to do something about this, I am. If I ever get in any kind of position. Now, there's two things that we need to do. Now, I got to tell you, I fought very hard for the anti-striker replacement bill. And I'm telling you, folks, we almost got it. 1993, Dick Gephardt, Speaker Foley, they passed it in the House. Came to the Senate, got through our committee, our labor committee. Metzenbaum, God rest him, Senator Howard Metzenbaum and I. Senator Metzenbaum and I led the charge on the floor. We lost it by two votes. By not getting the 60 votes. We had the 51, but we couldn't get the cloture of 60 votes because we lost two Democrats. We lost two Democrats. Now, I'm not going to, well, why shouldn't I? It's public record. I can say whatever is public. There were two Democrats in the state of Arkansas. And we had a president at that time from the state of Arkansas. You go add it up. Well, I said after that, we got to do one more thing. Because I saw what was happening to people then as I got more involved in this in terms of trying to organize a union and what was happening to people. And I just got in on the tail end when you were talking about Sarah, people like that, what they were trying to form unions, what happened to them. I said, well, in the next big battle is to give employees the right to form a union without walking over cut glass and going through boot camp hell. They got to have an easy way for them to say, yes, I want a union, without being harassed, without being intimidated, without being fired. So now the time has come for us to take this step. Why is it that employers only get to make the choice? Employees should be able to have that choice too. If the majority sign a union card, it's only fair that management bargain with those people. I don't know if you said this, Larry, but you're the first one that brought it to my attention. 46 countries that have free labor unions permit a sign-up. And we don't. Well, it's not rocket science. It's not rocket science. Well, it's fashionable these days to quote Abraham Lincoln, so what the heck, I'll quote Abraham Lincoln. Here's what he said. It has happened in all ages of the world that some have labored and others have, without labor, enjoyed a large proportion of its fruits. This is wrong and should not continue. To secure each laborer the whole product of his labor, or as nearly as possible, is a most worthy object of any good government. End quote. That was my kind of Republican. Well, now I'm sure you've been hearing that Republicans and folks of the Chamber of Commerce saying that they've killed EFCA. Well, to paraphrase Mark Twain, the reports of EFCA's death are greatly exaggerated. I'm here to tell you it's alive and kicking. I'm leading the charge. Senator Kennedy asked me to do it. I'm proud to do it. I'm actively talking to Democrats who have expressed reservations about the bill. I've been meeting with them one-on-one, and I can tell you that both Senator Harry Reid, our majority leader, and Senator Dick Durbin, our assistant leader, are both adamantly for the Employee Free Choice Act. And I'm talking with senators who expressed reservations about the bill. Now, as Larry said, we're waiting for Al Franken to join us as soon as possible. But, you know, we always expected that we'd probably have to make some compromises, some changes and all that. I don't mind if we have to make some compromises. But there are three core principles on which we will not back down. One, giving workers real freedom to choose their own union. Secondly, ensuring that workers who organize will get a first contract at a date certain after that union is organized. And third, providing meaningful penalties for repeated violations of workers' rights. Well, I just want you, I'm working hard. I'm having a meeting later today with some about this. I believe we can find a reasonable compromise that will fulfill those three goals, and we can pass a good bill this year. But I have said this. If senators refuse to compromise, and if they refuse to come to the table in good faith, I have served notice that I will take the original EFCA bill to the floor and demand an up or down vote on it. And then we can see where everyone stands on this important legislation so that working people know how to vote accordingly. I hope it doesn't have to come to this. People on both sides have acknowledged the current system is broken. So I guess I would just end with this. Can we pass the Employee Free Choice Act? Yes, we can!